Hey there, my name is Theo Steiner, and you are listening to UIT Inside, our weekly podcast for front-end developers who love user interfaces and technologies. You might be wondering why I am speaking in English and not Japanese as usual. The reason is, we have a special guest on the show today, and I'm very excited for you to meet him today. Eduardo, could you give us a brief self-introduction?
Hello, thanks for having me first. My name is Eduardo. On GitHub and Twitter, I'm known as Pozva. I'm a member of the Vue.js core team. I'm the author of VueRouter, Pinia, and other smaller libraries, but usually if people know me from something, it's that, Router and Pinia. Other than that, I'm a front-end developer and I live in France, but I'm from Spain.
And we both met first at VueFest
yes.
Japan.
Actually, last week.
Yeah. How was it?
It was great. Honestly, it's such a nice conference. To me, it's crazy. As someone who has organized conferences before, it's crazy how dedicated the team is, how many they are, like 60. I think there were 60. And yeah. The organization, the coordination, the level of detail is impressive. I don't think we go that deep, at least in France, you know, the conferences I helped. Yeah, so for people who are just doing that for free, I think it's really amazing. It's really impressive. I respect it all.
Yeah, it was also my first VueFest and I was super blown away. So like, I'm usually more active in the Svelte community and we can only dream of having a conference this big in Japan. I mean, I'm trying my best, but so far, yeah, nowhere near that level of professionality.
One day.
And you did a talk at the VueFest Japan. We're gonna dive into that later. But first, how did you get to be a core contributor on Vue? Like, what's your history in the Vue community?
So my history with Vue started, I think it's 8 years now. I didn't really note down the year. Maybe I should at some point actually look at the date. But it's pretty early. It's pretty early days of Vue. I started using Vue on version 0.12. Yeah, it was just released. It was right after 0.11. For example, I know Kazupon, who is also a core team member and was one of the organizers of VueFest. He was there in 0.11, maybe before even. And and so I remember seeing his face already in the issues and pull request. And so initially I was working at a company as a consultant. So I was really young. I was right after my studies. And we were doing a lot of AngularJS. I don't know which version it was at the time. As I kept using it, I found a lot of issues. And also the mental model didn't fit the way I like to think. So I felt like it was getting more in the way. I would check app documentation more often than not. And in the evenings, I would check out all the libraries that were existing. I think Riot was also one of the libraries at the time. React, of course, was also there. And Vue really clicked with me when I started using the documentation. I started building projects because of the simplicity. So it was a very different time, honestly. The whole bundler scene was not there. We were still using Gulp and Grunt. So it was very different. The kind of performance, but things were not as fast when building, right? So we have other interests in other things. And it was more in the API and how simple it made to communicate between, I have this mental model of data I want to display and I want to base that as a source of truth. And I want it to render always and to always be updated. That was the main issue, the most important one. I think nowadays we forget about that a lot, but in those days it was really important. So I started using it a lot. I started diving a lot in the issues, commenting here and there, sometimes helping out with triaging mostly, I think. So I would help people with their issues to see if there were bugs or not. So I will tell them, oh, you're just doing this, but you should be doing that. When I look back at my comments, I can see that there is a lot of, at least I improved a lot. It wasn't that great back then, helping people. Mm-hmm. Also, English is obviously not my first language, although I'm fluent. I think a few years ago, I would definitely have a different tone with speaking. So maybe more direct, or I would just not have the same level of subtlety when speaking, which is fine in open source, I think. So at some point, Evan also asked for a core team to be formed and to reach out to him via form, maybe, I think, in order to more of a formality to create a team, have a Slack, and we could discuss about things a little bit more organized. And so that's how I really got into the Vue core team. And I think, and so Kazupon was also there, and we were like 20, a bit less. A lot of the people from the initial team has disappeared, not disappeared, but they are not there anymore. Maybe they passed on to something else. In the end, it's always difficult, I think, to contribute to open source and have a full-time job. Definitely something you cannot do at all ages. I think the window is actually very short.
Yeah.
Or you have a life where you have a lot of freedom, which is not something everybody can afford. And as again, with age comes more issues, even with health or anything, you're more likely to have issues. If you want to have a family, then that's another thing. You have more responsibility. So yeah, if there is a small window, I think, in developers' life, where you have this opportunity to join some kind of community and try to be part of it in different ways. And once that time window has passed, you can not join in the same way, or because you won't be able to fund yourself.
So if you get the opportunity, you have to grab it.
Yes.
I'm already like wanting to go off script because you said you started with Vue version 0, and I only started with version 3. So I'm really interested in what the API looked like at version 0.
It was honestly the biggest difference is options API. At the beginning, it was really based on options. So we have a separations of type of things. We have data, methods, computed. There was a compiler. I think there was not compiler in the beginning. Compiler is V1 or V2? Maybe V2, actually. So it was more of modifications to the DOM directly. But I think Angular was also like that. And the main idea was there, and it hasn't changed. The fundamental idea of having a source of truth, and you write your template, and you have some syntax on top of HTML that is still valid in HTML, was there. Also, you had a lot of, and this was a big strength back then. It's not a big strength that much anymore, but it's still something that only Vue has compared to any other framework in frontend. It's that you can still have an HTML, you have your page with HTML, and you have these extra things that are Vue.js specific, and you add JS on top for the Vue, and it will not hydrate, because it's not SSR, it's not the right term, but it will rebuild the HTML. So you don't need a build phase. Essentially, that's the point. You don't need a build phase to actually use Vue. And some projects I did in a consultancy, which now use Nuxt, if I'm not mistaken, but I haven't been there for many years, they started using Vue 1, and Vue 1 with templates. And in the backend, it was like Symfony, so PHP. And Vue helped us have a more maintainable frontend code than using jQuery. So it really was a better replacement for jQuery. It helped to have this concept of components also, which hasn't changed. The concept of components has been the same. So yeah, that was the big thing. No build phase and only options API.
Yeah, everything has changed a lot with composition API, but you can still write option API today and it still works, which is, the backwards compatibility of Vue is great, I think. So you're a very proficient open source library author.
Yes.
And as you said earlier, maybe best known for Pinya and Vue Router or Router, however you say it.
American.
So let's dive maybe a bit into Pinya. So Pinya is a state management library. We use it actually here at Line Yahoo Corporation. Cool. And thank you for that. So what does Pinya enable?
So Pinya, it doesn't enable that much. And that's the good thing about Pinya. And it really is about global state management and having a centralized solution that is type-safe and SSR compatible to use. So it's the official state management solution. You don't need to use it in a lot of projects. Mm-hmm. And you could get away by having like global refs in some projects. It's more about some standards it introduces. So people, when going from a project to another, they will still be able to use the Pinya functions. The API, honestly, is very small in the end. The Surface API is really small. The idea really is to be able to define global state in a way that looks like Vue. So, for example, you have two types of store. You have option stores, which are going to look more like options API. So you also have state, you have getters and actions, which basically is the equivalent of a component, data, computed, and methods. It's pretty much the same. So you can also see the store as a component without a template that is always there, that is outside of the tree of components. And then you have setup stores, which are like composition, so composables, which are functions that use the composition API to encapsulate logic. And so these offers a very low level of granularity. you can really split up things, organize the code, the data, the functions the way you want. And so PNI allows to define a global composable, kind of like a singleton. And it works with SSR, it has dev tools as well. So it really tries to make things as close as Vue for state management. And it was also a way to migrate more easily from Vuex, because Vuex at the time of Vue 3, even Vue 2, has a poor TypeScript support. And this is also inherent to the way the API is created and the way you interact with the store. We would have what we call magic strings. So we would access the store via these in components dot dollar store, for example, you have dollar something. And so there is no way to infer, I mean, you can infer with some manual code now in TypeScript, but not in the time. It wasn't that easy in the time. And it has other issues, like you always have a big store with everything inside, even if you create modules, or you have to do dynamic modules, but it requires some extra code. So PNI has been engineered in a way that it doesn't get in your way. All these things, you get them for free, is inherent to the API. So I think I'm really happy with that part of things that it's mostly people don't really see them, because you don't need to. And I think that's the best kind of API when it's invisible.
Yeah, that's true. It's a very lightweight API. And I love your explanation of it basically being a component that is shared between other components, but it doesn't have a template. And that's like especially true since you can use the composition API and the option API. So it's almost like a Vue component without a template. Yeah, as you said. So a question regarding the way you author PNI stores. Is the composition API, is it like recommended to use it over the options API?
There is no like recommended, because it depends what you mean by recommended, right? For me personally, I prefer to just always use a composition API just to have a more coherent writing of stores. The reason is there are things you cannot do with options, option stores simply, because you are limited to organizing things by type. If you want to go have, what is the word in English? If you want to level up your game and the way you organize code, you will have to go to a lower level you will have to go into a lower level of code organization, which means that you are exposed to more risk, but you also have more control. And this is where you should learn and grow. And this is where you can create actually better code organization than just having a type organization. So because of this, personally, I would recommend to use the setup stores whenever possible. But some people are still not there. They are learning, and the option stores are there for them too. I think this is also a good point to show that for people starting, Vue was also a great choice because of the options API. So when people are starting, they feel so much more comfortable not having to think about where to put things, because they are organizing by type. It's like having a, I forgot the word, where you put your socket.
Like a structure.
Not a structure, but in your closet, where you put your clothes, you usually...
Like a drawer. A drawer,
exactly, thank you. So you have one drawer for each kind of things, right? Most people organize them by kind of thing. So like have t-shirts, you have pants, you have socks, you have underwear, right? So this is very easy to do. I think mentally, we are used to this kind of mental model. That's why it's also very easy for people to get started with Vue, and why it was so attractive for people in the first place, especially in Vue V1 and stuff, because people just will look at a Vue code and be like, oh, I understand this right away, because they can see data, they can see methods. Now, when it gets complicated, the component is not that easy, right? So that's why the composition API helps.
Very interesting. Vue as a drawer for your mind, or like the options API as a drawer to organize your code. Okay, so that's PNI, and you're also known for another very, very big library, VueRouter. How did you come to write VueRouter? I think it's like the most common router API, the most common router library in Vue. How did it come to that?
Yeah, so in Vue, we have official solutions. So the idea is we gather feedback, we consider also a lot of backward compatibility things, and we try to move fast when we need to move fast, and then we move slow to not break things, right? So I think I apply this well to VueRouter, because I slowed down other parts where I could break APIs, and I went fast when I needed to, but I still took the time it needed to develop. I got into it very early on my journey with Vue, I think, and I wrote the V4 version. So there was a lot of things to take into account. The V4 version of VueRouter is for Vue 3, and Routers are a very interesting topic. Everybody takes them for granted, but they're very complex and their responsibility spans all over the application code. So it's a really hard piece of software to design properly. And sometimes it's better not to over design it. So by that, I mean not creating too many APIs, but rather exposing lower level APIs because people have opinions and people want to use their own abstractions for some stuff. So it's better to not overcommit in an API that might end up not being useful in many cases, but still adding to the bundle. And VRouter is one of the most powerful routers out there, actually, when you, in terms of features, it has been way more powerful than any other route in many years. Mm-hmm. Now we have a lot of typed route and typing like parameters. And there are a few features now that I'm still adding back to the router. But even though it was one of the pioneers, I think, in typed route, in type pages and type safety, in VRouter, we have these for 2 years now. And there are all the concepts that were not there. So for me, it was a very interesting topic, but very time demanding. So, and it's a big challenge because people don't really take a look too much into the router, or it's like, yeah, it's just there. Also, maybe a marketing issue on my side, to be honest.
I recently dove into your Vue Unplugin router, the one that has like full type safety and file-based routing. And I have to say it's like a new way of doing routing because it's like end-to-end type safe. And I don't think we had that before in the Vue world.
No. I mean, actually, yes, we did have some things that were... So there was something in the Nuxt ecosystem that was similar. And I think I talked to the author of the library and... I'm not completely sure. I'm trying to roll back, like to rewind in my memory. So they had something similar. They were using a different approach because they were only for Nuxt, right? It was specifically for Nuxt. So you already have the file-based routing. It's a little bit different, but the idea is still the same. Based on the file structure, you can infer the types of the routes.
And the way you do it in Vue Unplugin Router is really cool. With the like, you create virtual modules.
Yes.
Thanks. I believe. And then you import types from the virtual modules. That's like as a techie, I just
you like that?
When I saw that, I was like, oh, this is so cool.
It was a big headache with types TypeScript. Sometimes it's
I can imagine.
It doesn't work, and you don't know where to debug because of it. It's mostly the augmentation.
You have to solve the type puzzle.
Yeah, you have to. You remove stuff. You comment stuff out, and you're like, oh, now it works. I comment this out. Now it doesn't work. You start tweaking things. Yeah, type augmentation is can be a pain. To debug for sure.
So the Vue Unplugin Router brings us to the next section of our episode. You actually had a talk at the ViewFest Japan, an amazing talk. I really enjoyed it. And it was titled Async State Management with Vue Router. So what is up with that? What is Async State Management with Vue Router?
Async State Management is... So well, something funny is people usually when they hear async state management, they hear async and then state management. But the real split is async state management. And it's just a differentiation from state management or global state management. When we say state management, it can be both. Async state management, it's just a very generic word to say we handle the async state. So that means, is the operation running? Do we have an error? Do we have the data back? Can we refresh it? So there is a lot of things around that. And we can add things like cache, persistence, refreshing. So by not refreshing, but rehydrating from the persistence, pausing, resuming. There is a lot of things. You can go really, really far. So most of the time, this means data fetching in web applications. We're not going to lie to ourselves. Yeah. The truth is that it still goes a little bit farther. The truth is that it still goes a little bit further because you can also integrate other kinds of async state management. So you could have WebSockets and other more complex operations. But data fetching is going to be the main topic. So I'm going to limit to talking to data fetching because it should be what most people are familiar with. It means that... So the talk was really about combining this data fetching that is not always in the router to the router and the benefits of doing so. So most of the time when you do data fetching or async state management, in general, you have some kind of solution that handles that. Is it loading? Did we have an error? Otherwise, if you write the code by yourself, which you can, it's a lot of boilerplate. So you end up abstracting it and then you keep adding features and then it becomes a bit too big and you may end up writing your own library, like less than query, Swerve, or Nuxt have their own implementation. So the talk is really about combining these solutions with the router to bring also the benefits of being able to integrate data fetching into the navigation. Because, well, there is a lot of some of the benefits that are talked about in the talk, but there can be easily summarized into: you want to be able to control the navigation. This means redirecting to a page if the user has no access, display the page with an error, maybe if it's a 404, when you want to display the detail of a document in the database, but also having a better analysis knowledge of what is going on in your page. So if you just load the data asynchronously on when the component mounts, your navigations are going to be instant and you would not have any metrics on what are the pages that take the longer to load from a client side perspective, because if you have server side rendering, as long as you load the data on the server, you can still have that. So it's more of a realistic point of view on what is fast, what isn't fast in your application. Integrating into the navigation allows you to know how long take on the client side some of the pages. So analytic wise, this is really nice too. And so that's the point, right? Is having these benefits, but without giving up all the benefits of using a full-fledged async state management library. And this is the data loader, basically, or loaders. The name is not really sexy, but I don't think it requires to be that cool. It's just, it loads something, that's it.
So my understanding is that data loaders are implemented on top of root guards or route guards, like the before enter route guards.
Yes. Is that correct? Route guards or middlewares, you can call them whatever you want. The concept is the same. It's a function that runs before the navigation is confirmed and allows to control the navigation outcome. By control, I mean cancel, so abort, redirect, and also delay. It's asynchronous.
Yeah, I think that really gives you a lot of flexibility because you can get the data and look into the data and decide based on the data you got where you redirect your user to, or if you have to cancel or do something else. It's a really beautiful pattern, I think. Did you have like any sort of inspiration for this pattern?
Yeah, definitely. So I try to, when I come with these ideas, I mean, the loading into a navigation guard, that's something that has existed for a long time. But I wanted to have an API that allowed me to collocate the code that is relevant to the data fetching to the code that displays that results. So usually this means page components. In page components, I want to be able to define loaders some without being limited to it. This is also the important part. I don't want to be limited by this collocation. And I want to be able to use it right away underneath. When you have the navigation guards, you really are away from the component because it's a global thing. It's in the router. So I did look at what other frameworks were doing with loaders in general, because every single framework had their own version of loader. And they are mostly doing a very simple version compared to the version I'm doing. So I wasn't really satisfied with the inspiration I got. But it was still great to see that other people were going in a similar direction. Because I've been trying to advocate for the navigation in navigation data fetching for a long while. And some of them do not really integrate into the navigation because they only do it on server side, but not on client side. And so data loaders are both server and client side. They really hook into the navigation itself. And so the reason I say that some of the frameworks have a more simplified version is because sometimes they don't allow multiple loaders, for example. They don't allow nesting loaders, which is something I didn't talk about in the talk, but you can nest loaders and have by default is parallel, which I didn't even say, but because I think it should be granted, like take it for granted, your navigation should maximize the parallelization of loading as much as it could. And so the data loaders do this and you don't even need to worry about it. But you don't need to have one loader per route. You can have multiple ones. So you don't even think you need that. And you don't even need to think about it. And then you can also combine it with the full-fledged libraries that bring all the features like cache, persistence, as I was saying before, or just do the basic one. So that's definitely something that no other framework has, right? Having a loader that can be augmented, like a spec.
Yeah, it's maybe a level like lower than other frameworks.
Yeah.
Like if I, for example, think of Remix or SvelteKit, which have like a similar loading pattern, but then it's not as composable because you don't have the loader itself that you can like freely pass around.
Exactly, yeah.
You can still like, for example, in Svelte, you could use the loader that is like in your layout and like await it or something, but it's not as composable and low level as the data loaders in ViewRouter, which I think are a really nice pattern. And what I especially love about them is that there is not one data loader. Like in your talk, you were like, actually, I lied to you. There is no data loaders. Because data loaders are just a spec. And for example, Like one that comes default with your router is the basic.
Yeah, you have two defaults. So like two official implementations in a way is the basic, as you were saying. So you can rename it, you can auto import it any way you want. That's why I didn't bother too much with the naming. It's like define basic loader. And this is just takes a function that returns a promise. That's it. And then the Colada, there is the define Colada loader. So this one is based on Pina Colada. And Pina Colada is a layer on top of Pina. So you can call it whatever you want. It uses Pina more specifically the stores, to handle the data, the global data, the global state management. And it sprinkles on top all the goodies for cache, async state, and invalidation, optimistic updates, a lot of things that are really useful. And it makes it also in a way that is really progressive, which is something we really like in Vue. So it should be simple to get started. It should be simple to go further away by adding things. So you shouldn't be rewriting your whole code when you need to make things more complex. Most of the time, you should be able to just add things to the code you already have and still stay simple.
I want to dive into Pina Colada a bit further later on, but like other than the two basic loaders you provide by default, what kind of loaders could be implemented? Why is it a spec?
Yeah, it's a spec because I didn't want to lock in users into some specific implementation. So the basic loader doesn't use any other library, right? It doesn't rely on any other library to handle anything. So it only has data, error, loading state, and you can refresh the data without navigating. That's pretty much it. Error management, loading state, data, and refreshing. And any implementation can add their set of features. So like Pina Colada does add the cache and persistent annotation invalidations. This is handled by an external library, which is independent to the router. It works by itself, right? So we have some glue code. You can even think about the the loaders as glue code. And then you could have something with other libraries that other people use. So it could be TensorQuery, which is a very popular solution for async state management, right? And Pina Colada actually has an API that looks a lot like TensorQuery. It's obviously on purpose to be able to seem familiar to people. And you can also do ViewFire. So ViewFire would have what would be special about ViewFire is that you will wait for the initial data to be ready, and then it will become real time, something like that. And so WebSockets, you could imagine something similar. You await for the WebSocket to be set up and the connection to be ready, and then it just alive. It's just there. Of course, you still need to handle some of the intrinsic behaviors of WebSockets, like disconnecting and stuff like that. That's a whole different story. So you could imagine any loader that integrates with any other technology, library or technology, and that brings their own very special set of features that is not specific to data loaders. Because the idea is really, as long as you implement these internal, low-level API that the router relies on for the navigation guard to run and to get data, it will work. And it has a lot of features that are actually more complex to implement that it looks like the ability to have consistent updates. So the loaders are meant to delay updating the data until the navigation is validated, which is very abstract concept. But when you have client-side that loading based on the routes, if you navigate to a different route and you have multiple parts of the application that have different fetches, you may end up with data that arrives at different times. And so, for example, you have profile information, which is the demo that I showed. You might have some information that takes longer to load, and you will have the information of the user be displayed with different user information, actually. But it looks like you're looking at one person. So you have like this Frankenstein of information. Mm-hmm. So data loaders also are meant to fix that. And no matter what library you use, of course, you need to implement it. And I have a big suite of tests that you need to pass in order to say, okay, this is a compatible data loader, but it's there, it's doable.
That's really cool that you're like trying to verify that the loaders the community provides are actually like functional data loaders. So like, given you can use Pina Colada or something like ViewQuery inside the data loaders, I wonder how like they make data loading, I think declarative is the key word here, where you define the dependencies for a set of data and you refetch the data whenever the dependencies change. How does that work if I put the declaration inside the loader? Like, does the loader need to know about the state?
What do you mean by declaration? Like, what are you putting inside?
Like, for example, if I put use query inside
the... You mean to create your own version of the query? Of the loader?
Yes.
No, it's a bit more complicated than that. You need to create some custom defined query loader, for example, TanStack query loader, that will at some point call use query inside of its code.
Okay.
So it,
I see. So it's not as easy as just putting the loader.
Yeah. You know, it requires
the query into the loader.
So the reason it requires some, it's definitely not easy. Also, because some of the features that I have on the loaders are a bit complex. So if you look at the implementation for the basic loader, it's a bit shorter. The loader is a bit longer because of the extra features it has, and they can serve as a starting point as well. The reason is I tend to move a lot of the complexity from the user code to the library code as much as possible. I really believe that a good API should be very easy in 80%. It's difficult to explain without the words, but I have another talk where I explain this, like what is a good design, a good API design. So for 80% of the use cases, it should be very easy. And then it should get exponentially harder to get things done. So you're sacrificing the real uncommon use cases for a more complex code, but making it extremely easy to get what most people need to do. So you have like a kind of curve. What was the curve? If you have the complexity, how common it is. So on the horizontal axis, it goes like, is this very common? And then the vertical axis will be the difficulty. And so it should be something like, it goes very low and then it goes up really quick. It's like it's
okay.
So it should be.
It's like a inverted logarithmic curve.
Yes, I haven't done a lot of math of this kind for a long time, so I don't want to say anything. Yeah, there is some exponential in there.
Yeah. So you optimize for the most common use cases and sacrifice like the very complex use cases. I mean, you don't sacrifice them. You just make it a bit harder to.
It's hard. Sacrifice the API, I would say. So the API is it's not adapted for those cases. But this is very abstract. But the idea is only very, very extremely personalized use cases should be a little bit hard. Should be harder to do, but not impossible. Not impossible at all. It's just that you roll back to the lower level of the API, so you have to implement some other things yourselves. And so it requires way more work than having a linear API, which I think is really bad API design.
So you said earlier that the Vue community strives to always have one solution for one problem. Is there like a similar effort with data loaders?
Okay, so what I mean is, what I said is more, we have official solutions, that's the short version. It means that anything that is really needed in applications, like the core foundations should be official. We have official solutions. So that's the router and state management alongside Vue. And then we have things like ESLint. And there are other things that right now I don't have them. Oh, the testing abstraction as well. So we try as much as we can to have official solutions for the things that are important, DevTools as well. And then other specific solutions are created by the community, right? Contributed by the community. Next, in the end, is still a community project in a way. Internationalization, it's also a community project, and so on. So data loaders, similar to Pinia, I like to start projects on the side. That way I can iterate a bit faster on the ideas. They are not labeled as official. And once they get labeled as official, you get a lot more of users that have a different demography, right? So you have people who have different levels of knowledge, and it takes a lot more effort to adapt the documentation, some of the warnings, some of the APIs as well, to match the same level of quality that we have in Vue, I would say. So it's easier to iterate faster during this period with less documentation and simplified API. So you only have users who are actually quite good. They are more experienced developers, more seasoned developers. And so they're able to give you interesting feedback, which is not the case for some of the beginners developers. But then once you get official, you need to be able to be easy for beginners as well. And this is way harder than it looks like.
So actually the reason I'm asking is on the Vue Unplugin Router repository, I looked through the issues and there are quite a few issues from like Vue Nuxt maintainers. And I wondered, is there maybe a future where Nuxt uses the next generation Vue router under the hood?
So it already uses, this is why it's there are some issues with that. Yep. It already uses, but only for the types, okay? So in the future, I mean, I talked to Daniel and Sebastian, and I'm close to the team anyway. So I try to ensure that there is nothing breaking for them. In the future, it would be better if it could be completely integrated. So for that, I will need to make sure that every piece of API is open enough for Nux to work with it. Right now, they don't use the parsing of the file system. So they some of the APIs I expose them only for them. So they can actually generate the types based on a structure. And they can build a structure themselves, I think, something like that. So for example, you have an experimental type pages flag on NuxConfig that you can set to true. You have type routes, but you don't have the data loaders and all the features. So I need to build, which is one of the things that I do right now, is build the modules to make that easy. But there's still, because they don't use the Vite plugin, there is no parsing on the code. And some of the things happen at build time to make just your life a little bit easier. Like you can even remove the export of the data loaders and stuff like that, and it will still work. So these are still not working on Next, unfortunately.
Actually, a little fun side fact. My team uses a Vue Unplugin router internally, and I needed to convince my boss before, because we were building this SBA and it has been around for a long time and it's built on Vue router. And I wanted to like introduce loaders, and I didn't want to like roll my own version on top of before entry route hooks. So I looked into your library and I was like, oh, this is beautiful. But it had this like small little experimental label on it. So I showed it to my boss and he was like, experimental. That might be a hard time. It might change after. So I looked who is using it, and I found it inside the Nux dependencies. So I was like, I went to my boss and I was like, look, Nux is depending on it. There's not going to be so much breaking change. But yeah, of course, we knew it was a high risk adventure, but it was better than the opportunity, which was like hand rolling our own stack. No one knows Vue router better than you. So who else to implement it?
Thanks. And no, most of the API, it's been pretty much stable. Like most of the changes are small. The whole structure, like if you use file-based routing, the whole file-based routing has been pretty much stable from the beginning because it was supposed to be mapped to what Nux could do. I didn't want to bike shed too much on the syntax. So there are a few things that do not exist in Nux. Just one mainly, named views. So I had to introduce a syntax for that. And I will probably introduce syntax similar to SvelteKit or Next, I think, where you have a page or route with a plus in the front or a dollar or whatever. And these allows you to define sometimes information that are relative to the route, but you don't have a page. So you can have nesting of information like meta properties and stuff like that. And there are a few things that can change, but minor breaking changes. Most of the APIs, if they are exposed, they are unlikely to change too much. And everything, so things that are actually experimental, they are marked experimental again inside of the package, right? You have, this is experimental, could change because I'm still having confirmed. I think it's mostly the editable route tree or something like that, which is, it's a bit too much. You have to, it's supposed to allow users to map to a route array. So you're able to edit the tree in a way that is similar to how you edited routes array, which is something people used to do a lot. But because it's done at build time, it keeps the type safety. And so this part of being edited at build time also includes, limitations. Like you cannot add a random code into the like functions, for example. Anything that is non-serializable cannot be added to the tree. So you have these limitations that you have to overcome in runtime, but people usually already did that. So they should be able to copy paste that code anyway.
Very interesting. And for data loaders, I believe they are like one of the more stable parts of the experimental Vue router suite. Do you have like an estimate for when they might make it to the official Vue router?
To the official Vue router, I don't know. It's true that in the future, I would imagine integrating the Unplugin Vue router, or maybe just Vite plugin. I'm not sure yet of how to integrate everything, because I have issues that I can only fix, issues with HMR. So hot module replacement that can only be fixed for Vite. And I just don't have the capacity to write the code for how many bundlers do we have, like six?
Yeah.
It's just too much. So Webpack and Vite, usually they work pretty much the same. And as long as people have the same API as Vite, it should be fine. My goal is probably to include this in Vue router package at some point, not in the package, in the repository. It will still be a separate package that you install, I think, because it's important to keep the separation for major version. It's just easier. It's not far from having a stable version. This is just more personal. I take a lot of time to mark a version as stable, way more than other people. And it's more that with personal life, I have delayed this a lot, but it's not far from having a stable release. I have like few small changes I want to add to loaders, improvements, which should not even be breaking changes, but just in case, have to wait. I have the naming, the default naming, because you can configure the naming of the routes anyway. So I wanted to change the default naming maybe to be easy to differentiate from a string path. So I still need to think a little bit about it, see what other people are doing, see if somebody has a better idea, and maybe sometimes it helps you see things from a different perspective. And apart from that, I think it's all features, and it hasn't had many breaking changes. I mean, I still had 9 breaking changes, right? Technically, because I had version 10, I mean, 0.10. So I do breaking changes since I'm still on 0.something, the breaking changes happens on the minor. So any minor version is a breaking change, at least sometimes small ones. But
to give a comment from a user perspective, the breaking changes have not been very like big. Like it was very easy to adjust to them.
I'm glad. I don't even remember anymore like what were. The data loaders did have a breaking change. And like they were quite big, but it was necessary because I discovered a big flaw. And I'm trying to check like what did I have? Performance breaking change. Oh, requires view router 4.4. Okay. Oh, okay. Create router now requires the explicit router. So it was for TypeScript. Yeah, it was like I discovered flows and I was like, okay, I need to fix this. And then 8 was a lot of data loaders. Yeah, it was changing types. Honestly, the whole type was, I felt like it was so fragile at the beginning. And also did relying on the virtual files on Vite has been a little bit of a roller coaster sometimes. Exclude no longer relative to routes folder. So this was more like a fix. Yeah, there are some that are fixes technically, but it's like, oh, I could break people. So let's just, oh, actually, no, there are not that many breaking changes because before I was just doing it for features sometimes. There are a few. Like rename file pattern to file patterns because it's, that was an array. Yeah, these are small changes. But hopefully, yeah, it hasn't had big breaking changes for a while. I think it's May. May was the last one, the big last one.
So I think like this is probably all the time we've got for today. Is there anything else you would like to add before we end the show?
I guess I can always plug myself as, if your company uses the open source I do, consider reaching out or for sponsorships. I'm still looking to find a balance between the open source and freelancing. And I have very nice options for companies to have a direct connection, like a direct being able to just talk to me about the issues they have. The developers are usually really happy with these because they can ask very technical questions, or I can help them debug bugs and it saves them hours. So it's usually just worth the money, which is just sponsoring.
You also have courses, right?
Yeah, I have a Mastering Pina course, which is named after Pina, but in reality it's about stores. So it helps you learn a lot about Vue itself, the composition API. And yeah, it's very recent. It has only 1 year old. So it's still very, 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 what's the term? Not up to date, but relevant.
Fresh.
Yeah, it's relevant. No, it's relevant for the current scene. Yeah, and the feedback has been very, very good. Like people are like, yeah, I learned so much. None of these, I never thought about these, never saw this API anywhere else. And now I can use it for some of my features, and it simplifies my code so much. Yeah, really happy about it. It's also really fun. A lot of exercises.
Fantastic.
Really practical.
And where can people go to follow you?
On Twitter, X or GitHub as Posva, POSVA. That's where I hang out most of the time.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming on today. It was a pleasure. Thank you.